easy while wielding a sword, and almost slid off the other side of the hippo's head before I hooked my free arm around its ear. The hippo roared and shook me like a dangle earring. I caught a glimpse of a fishing boat sailing calmly by as if nothing were wrong. The crew orbs of the Egyptian queen zipped around a large crack in the stern. Just for a moment, I saw Zia floundering in the water about 20 yards downstream. Then her head went under. I summoned all my strength and drove my sword into the hippo's ear. The monster thrashed its head. I lost my grip and went sailing across the river like a 3-point shot. I would have hit the water hard, but at the last second, I changed into a falcon. I know, it sounds crazy. Oh, by the way, I just happened to change into a falcon. But it was fairly easy magic for me, since the falcon was Horus's sacred animal. Suddenly, instead of falling, I was soaring over the Nile. My vision was so sharp I could see field mice in the marshes. I could see Zia struggling in the water, as well as every bristle on the hippo's massive snout. I dove at the monster's eye, raking it with my claws. Unfortunately, it was heavily lidded and covered with some kind of membrane. The hippo blinked and bellowed in annoyance, but I could tell that I hadn't done any real damage. The monster snapped at me. I was much too fast. I flew to the ship and perched on the wheelhouse roof, trying to catch my breath. The Egyptian queen had managed to turn. It was slowly putting distance between itself and the monster, but the hull had taken serious damage. Smoke billowed from the cracks in the stern. We were listing to starboard, and Bloodstained Blade kept ringing his alarm bell, which was really annoying. Zia was working to stay afloat, but she drifted farther downstream from the hippo and didn't seem to be in immediate danger. She tried to summon fire, which isn't easy to do when you're floundering in a river. The hippo lumbered back and forth, apparently looking for the pesky bird that had poked it in the eye. The monster's ear was still bleeding, though my sword was no longer there. Maybe at the bottom of the river somewhere. Finally, the hippo turned its attention to the ship. Setna materialized next to me. His arms were still tied, but he looked like he was enjoying himself.
You ready for that advice now, pal? I can't cast the spell myself because I'm dead and all, but I can tell you what to say.
The hippo charged. It was less than 50 yards away, closing fast. If it hit the ship at that speed, the Egyptian queen would break into kindling. Time seemed to slow down. I tried to gather my focus. Emotions are bad for magic, and I was completely panicked. But I knew I'd only get one shot at this. I spread my wings and flew straight at the hippo. Halfway there, I transformed back into a human, dropped like a stone, and summoned the Avatar of Horus. If it hadn't worked, I would have ended my life as an insignificant grease spot on the chest of a charging hippo. Thankfully, the blue aura flickered around me. I landed in the river encased in the glowing body of a 20-foot-tall, hawk-headed warrior. Compared to the hippo, I was still tiny, but I got its attention when I drove my fist into its snout. That worked really well for about 2 seconds. The monster forgot all about the ship. I sidestepped and made it turn toward me, but I was way too slow. Wading through the river in avatar form was about as easy as running through a room full of bouncy balls. The monster lunged. It twisted its head and clamped its mouth around my waist. I staggered, trying to break free, but its jaws were like a vice grip. Its teeth sank into the magical shielding. I didn't have my sword. All I could do was pummel its head with my glowing blue fists, but my power was fading rapidly.
Kata!
Zia screamed. I had maybe 10 seconds to live. Then the avatar would collapse, and I'd be swallowed or bitten in half.
Setna! I yelled. What's that spell?
Oh, now you want the spell!
Setna called from the ship.
Repeat after me. Happy, uha, epwa!
I didn't know what that meant. Setna might have been tricking me into self-destructing or transforming into a chunk of Swiss cheese, but I was out of options. I shouted, "Happy Uha Epwa!" Blue hieroglyphs, brighter than I'd ever summoned, blazed above the hippo's head. Seeing them written out, I suddenly understood their meaning. Happy, arise, and attack. But what did that mean? At least they distracted the hippo. It let go of me and snapped at the hieroglyphs. My avatar failed. I plunged into the water, my magic exhausted, my defenses gone. Just tiny little Carter Kane in the shadow of a 16-ton hippo. The monster swallowed the hieroglyphs and snorted. It shook its head as if it had just gulped down a chili pepper. Great, I thought. Setna's awesome magic summoned an appetizer for the devil hippo. Then, from the boat, Setna yelled, "Wait for it! 3, 2, 1! The Nile boiled around me. A huge mass of brown seaweed erupted beneath me and lifted me skyward. Instinctively, I held on, slowly realizing that the seaweed wasn't seaweed. It was hair on top of a colossal head. The giant man rose from the Nile, higher and higher, until the hippo looked almost cute in comparison. I couldn't tell much about the giant from the top of his head, but his skin was darker blue than my father's. He had shaggy brown hair full of river muck. His belly was hugely swollen, and he seemed to be wearing nothing but a loincloth made of fish scales. The hippo lunged, but the blue giant grabbed its bottom teeth and stopped it cold. The force of the impact nearly shook me off his head. "Yay!" The blue giant bellowed. "Hippotas! I love this game!" He swung his arms in a golf swing motion and launched the monster out of the water. Few things are stranger than watching a giant hippo fly. It careened wildly, kicking its stubby legs as it sailed over the marshlands. Finally, it crashed into a limestone cliff in the distance, causing a minor avalanche. Boulders collapsed on top of the hippo. When the dust settled, there was no sign of the monster. Cars kept driving down the river road. Fishing boats went about their business, as if blue giants fighting hippos was nothing remarkable on this stretch of the Nile. "Fun!" the blue giant cheered. "Now, who summoned me?" "Up here," I yelled. The giant froze. He carefully patted his scalp until he found me. Then he picked me up with two fingers, waded over to the riverbank, and gently set me down. He pointed to Zia, who was struggling to reach the shore, and the Egyptian queen, which was drifting downstream, listing and smoking from the stern. "Are those friends of yours?" "Yes," I said. "Could you help them?" The giant grinned. "Be right back!" A few minutes later, the Egyptian queen was safely moored. Zia sat next to me on the shore, wringing Nile water out of her hair. Setna hovered next to us, looking quite smug, even though his arms were still tied. "So, maybe next time you'll trust me, Carter Kane." He nodded at the giant, who loomed over us, still grinning like he was really excited to be here. "May I present my old friend, Happy?" The blue giant waved at us. "Hi!" His eyes were completely dilated. His teeth were brilliant white. A mass of stringy brown hair fell around his shoulders, and his skin rippled in different shades of watery blue. His belly was much too big for his body. It sagged over his fish-scale skirt like he was either pregnant or had swallowed a blimp. He was, without a doubt, the tallest, fattest, bluest, most cheerful hippie giant I had ever met. I tried to place his name, but I couldn't. Hoppy? I asked.
Why, yes, I am happy,
Hoppy beamed.
I'm always happy because I'm happy. Are you happy?
I glanced at Setna, who seemed to find this terribly amusing.
Happy is the god of the Nile, the ghost explained. Along with his other duties, Happy is the provider of bountiful harvests and all good things, and so he is always happy, I guessed.
Zia frowned up at the giant.
Does he have to be so big?
The god laughed. Immediately he shrank down to human size, though the crazy cheerful look on his face was still pretty unnerving.
So,
Happy rubbed his hands with anticipation.
Anything else I can do for you kids? It's been centuries since anybody summoned me, since they built that stupid Aswan Dam. The Nile doesn't flood every year like it used to. Nobody depends on me anymore. I could kill those mortals.
He said this with a smile, as if he'd suggested bringing the mortals some home-baked cookies. I did some quick thinking. It's not often a god offers to do you favors, even if that god is psychotically over-caffeinated. Actually, yes, I said. See, Setna suggested I summon you to deal with the hippo, but...
Oh, Setna!
Happy chuckled and pushed the ghost playfully.
I hate this guy. Absolutely despise him. He's the only magician who ever learned my secret name. Ha!
Setna shrugged.
It was nothing, really. And I gotta say, you came in handy many times back in the old days. Ha! Ha!
Hoppy's smile became painfully wide.
I'd love to rip off your arms and legs, Setna! That would be amazing!
Setna's expression remained calm, but he drifted a little farther away from the smiling god.
Anyway, I said,
we're on a quest. We need to find this magic book to defeat Apophis. Setna was leading us to the ruins of Memphis, but now our boat is busted. Do you think...
Oh! Happy clapped excitedly. The world is going to end tomorrow. I forgot.
Zia and I exchanged looks.
Right,
I said. So if Setna told you exactly where we were going, could you take us there? And, if he won't tell you, then you could rip his limbs off. That would be fine.
Yay! Happy cried.
Setna gave me a murderous look.
Yeah, sure. We're going to the Serapeum, the Temple of the Apis Bull.
Hoppy smacked his knee.
I should have figured. Brilliant place to hide something. That's pretty far inland, but sure. I can send you there if you want.
And just so you know, Apophis has demons scouring the riverbanks.
You'd never get to Memphis without my help. You'd get torn into a million pieces.
He seemed genuinely pleased to share that news. Zia cleared her throat.
Okay, then. We'd love your help.
I turned toward the Egyptian queen, where Bloodstained Blade stood at the railing, awaiting further orders.
Captain, I called. Wait here and continue repairing the ship. We'll...
Oh, the ship can go, too,
Hoppy interrupted.
That's no problem.
I frowned. I wasn't sure how the river god was going to move the ship, especially since he told us Memphis was inland. But I decided not to ask. "Belay that order," I called to the captain. "The ship is coming with us. Once we reach Memphis, you'll continue repairs and await further orders." The captain hesitated. Then he bowed his axe-blade head.
"I obey, my lord."
"Great," Happy said. He held out his palm, which contained two slimy black orbs like fish eggs.
"Swallow these, one each."
Zia wrinkled her nose.
"What are they?"
"They'll take you where you want to go," the god promised. "They're happy pills."
I blinked. "What now?" The ghost, Setna, cleared his throat. He looked like he was trying not to laugh.
"Yeah, you know. Happy invented them. So that's what they're called." "Just eat them," Happy said. "You'll see."
Reluctantly, Zia and I took the pills. They tasted even worse than they looked. Instantly, I felt dizzy. The world shimmered like water.
"It was nice to meet you,"
Happy cried, his voice turning murky and distant.
"You do realize you're walking into a trap, don't you? Okay, good luck."
With that, my vision went blue, and my body melted into liquid. 12. Bulls with freaking laser beams. Being liquidated is not fun. I will never be able to walk by another liquidation sale sign without getting seasick and feeling like my bones are turning to tapioca. I know I'm going to sound like a public service announcement here, but for all you kids at home, if somebody offers you happy pills, just say no. I felt myself seeping inland through the mud, traveling at incredible speed. When I hit the hot sand, I evaporated, rising above the ground as a cloud of moisture, pushed west by the winds into the desert. I couldn't exactly see, but I could feel the movement and the heat. My molecules agitated as the sun dispersed me. Suddenly, the temperature dropped again. I sensed cool stone around me, a cave or an underground room, maybe. I coalesced into moisture, splashed to the floor as a puddle, then rose and solidified into Carter Kane once more. For my next trick, I buckled to my knees and lost my breakfast. Zia stood near me, hugging her stomach. We seemed to be in the entry tunnel of a tomb. Below us, stone steps led into the darkness. A few feet above, desert sunlight blazed.
"That was horrible,"
Zia gasped. I could only nod. Now I understood the science lesson my dad had once taught me in homeschooling. Matter has three forms, solid, liquid, and gas. In the last few minutes, I'd been all three, and I didn't like it. Setna materialized just outside the doorway, smiling down at us.
"So, did I come through again, or what?"
I didn't remember loosening his bonds, but his arms were now free. That would have worried me more if I hadn't felt so sick. Zia and I were still wet and muddy from our swim in the Nile, but Setna looked immaculate. Jeans and t-shirt freshly pressed, Elvis hair perfect, not even a spot on his white running shoes. That disgusted me so much, I staggered into the sunlight and threw up on him. Unfortunately, my stomach was mostly empty and he was a ghost, so nothing much happened.
"Hey, pal."
Setna adjusted his golden ankh necklace and straightened his jacket.
"Some respect, all right? I did you a favor."
"A favor?" I gulped back the horrible taste in my mouth. "Don't ever."
"Never happy again,"
Zia finished for me. "Never."
"Aw, come on,"
Setna spread his hands. "That was a smooth trip.
Look, even your ship made it.
I squinted. Mostly we were surrounded by flat, rocky desert, like the surface of Mars. But beached on a nearby sand dune was a slightly broken riverboat, the Egyptian Queen. The stern wasn't on fire anymore, but the ship looked like it had taken more damage in transit. A section of railing was broken. One of the smokestacks was leaning dangerously. For some reason, a huge, slimy tarp of fish scales was hanging off the pilot's house like a snagged parachute.
Zia muttered, "Oh, gods of Egypt, please don't let that be Happy's loincloth."
Bloodstained Blade stood at the bow, facing our direction. He had no expression, being an axe head, but from the way his arms were crossed, I could tell he was not a happy camper. "Can you fix the ship?" I called to him.
"Yes, my lord," he hummed, "given a few hours. Sadly, we seem to be stuck in the middle of a desert."
"We'll worry about that later," I said. "Get the ship repaired. Wait here for us to return. You'll receive more instructions at that time."
"As you say."
Bloodstained Blade turned and started humming at the glowing orbs in a language I didn't understand. The crew stirred into a flurry of activity. Setna smiled.
"See? Everything's good.
Except we're running out of time." I looked at the sun. I figured it was 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and we still had a lot to do before doomsday tomorrow morning. "Where does that tunnel go? What's the Serapeum? And why did Happy say it was a trap?"
"So many questions," Setna said. "Come on, you'll see. You're gonna love this place."
I did not love this place. The steps down led to a wide hall, chiseled from golden bedrock. The barreled ceiling was so low I could touch it without stretching my arms. I could tell that archaeologists had been here from the bare electric bulbs that cast shadows across the arches. Metal beams braced the walls, but the cracks in the ceiling didn't help me feel safe. I'd never been comfortable in enclosed spaces. Every 30 feet or so, square alcoves opened up on either side of the main hall. Each niche held a massive freestanding stone sarcophagus. After passing the 4th such coffin, I stopped. "Those things are way too big for humans. What's in there?"
"Bull," Setna said.
"Excuse me?" Setna's laugh echoed through the hall. I figured that if there were any sleeping monsters in this place, they were awake now.
"These are the burial chambers for the Apis bull,"
Setna gestured around him proudly.
"I built all this, you know, back when I was Prince Khayyam-Wasit."
Zia ran her hand along the white stone lid of the sarcophagus.
"The Apis bull. My ancestors thought it was an incarnation of Osiris in the mortal world."
"Thought?" Setna snorted. "It was his incarnation, doll, at least some of the time. Like on festival days and whatnot. We took our Apis bull seriously back then."
He patted the coffin like he was showing off a used car.
"This bad boy here? He had the perfect life. All the food he could eat. Got a harem of cows, burnt offerings, a special gold cloth for his back. All the perks. Only had to show himself in public a few times a year for big festivals. When he turned 25, he got slaughtered in a big ceremony, mummified like a king and put down here. Then a new bull took his place. Nice gig, huh?"
"Killed at 25, I said. "Sounds awesome." I wondered how many mummified bulls were down that hallway. I didn't want to find out. I liked being right here where I could still see the exit and the sunlight outside. "So why is this place called a... what was it?"
"Serapeum,"
Zia answered. Her face was illuminated with golden light, probably just the electrical bulbs reflecting off the stone, but it seemed like she was glowing.
Iskander, my old teacher, he told me about this place. The Apis bull was a vessel for Osiris. In later times, the names were merged, Osiris Apis. Then the Greeks shortened it to Serapis.
Setna sneered. Stupid Greeks. Moving in on our territory, taking over our gods. I'm telling you, I got no love for those guys. But yeah, that's how it happened. This place became known as a Serapium, a house for dead bull gods. Me? I wanted to call it the Kaimwasset Memorial of Pure Awesomeness, but my dad wouldn't go for it.
Your dad? I asked.
Setna waved aside the question. Anyway, I hid the Book of Toth down here before I died because I knew no one would ever disturb it. You'd have to be frothing at the mouth crazy to mess with the sacred tomb of the Apis Bull.
Great. I felt like I was turning back into liquid.
Zia frowned at the ghost.
Don't tell me. You hid the book in one of these sarcophagi with a mummified bull, and the bull will come to life if we disturb it.
Setna winked at her. Oh, I did better than that, doll. Archaeologists have discovered this part of the complex. He gestured at the electric lights and metal support beams. But I'm gonna take you on a behind-the-scenes tour. The catacombs seemed to go on forever. Hallways split off in different directions, all of them lined with sarcophagi for holy cows. After descending a long slope, we ducked through a secret passage behind an illusionary wall. On the other side, there were no electric lights. No steel beams braced the cracked ceiling. Zia summoned fire at the tip of her staff and burned away a canopy of cobwebs. Our footprints were the only marks on the dusty floor.
Are we close? I asked.
Setna chuckled. It's just getting good. He led us farther into the maze. Every so often, he stopped to deactivate traps with a command or a touch. Sometimes he made me do it, supposedly because he couldn't cast certain spells being dead. Though I got the feeling he thought it would be incredibly funny if I failed and died.
How come you can touch some things but not other things? I asked. You seem to have a real selective ability.
Setna shrugged. I don't make the rules of the spirit world, pal. We can touch money and jewelry. Picking up trash and messing with poison spikes? No. We get to leave that dirty work to the living.
Whenever the traps were disabled, hidden hieroglyphs glowed and vanished. Sometimes we had to jump over pits that opened in the floor or swerve when arrows shot from the ceiling. Paintings of gods and pharaohs peeled off the walls, formed into ghostly guardians, and faded. The whole time, Setna kept a running commentary.
That curse would have made your feet rot off, he explained. This one over here, that summons a plague of fleas. And this one, oh man, this is one of my favorites. It turns you into a dwarf. I hate those short little guys.
I frowned. Setna was shorter than me, but I decided to let it go.
Yes, indeed, he continued. You're lucky to have me along, pal. Right now you'd be a flea-bitten dwarf with no feet. And you haven't even seen the worst of it. Right this way.
I wasn't sure how Setna remembered so many details about this place from so long ago, but he was obviously proud of these catacombs. He must have relished designing horrible traps to kill intruders. We turned down another corridor. The floor sloped again. The ceiling got so low I had to stoop. I tried to stay calm, but I was having trouble breathing. All I could think about were those tons of stone over my head, ready to collapse at any moment. Zia took my hand. The tunnel was so narrow we were walking single file, but I glanced back at her.
You okay? I asked.
She mouthed the words, Watch him. I nodded. Whatever trap Happy had warned us about, I had a feeling we hadn't seen it yet, even though we were surrounded by traps. We were alone with a murderous ghost, deep underground in his home territory. I didn't have my Hepesh anymore. For some reason, I hadn't been able to summon it from the Duat. And I couldn't use my warrior avatar in such a tiny tunnel. If Setna turned on us, my options would be limited. Finally, the corridor widened. We reached a dead end, a solid wall flanked by two statues of my dad. I mean, Osiris. Setna turned.
Okay, here's the score, you guys. I'm gonna have to cast a disenchantment to open this wall. The spell takes a few minutes. I don't want you freaking out halfway through and wrapping me in pink ribbons, or things could get ugly. Half-finished magic right here, and this whole tunnel could collapse on top of us.
I managed to avoid screaming like a little girl, but only barely. Zia cranked the fire on her staff to white hot.
Careful, Setna. I know what a proper disenchantment sounds like. If I suspect you're casting anything else, I'll blast you into ectoplasmic dust.
Relax, doll.
Setna cracked his knuckles. His diamond pinky rings flashed in the firelight.
You gotta keep that scarab under control or you're gonna turn yourself into ashes.
I frowned. Scarab? Setna glanced back and forth between us and laughed.
You mean she hasn't told you? And you haven't figured it out? You kids today, I love the ignorance.
He turned toward the wall and began to chant. Zia's fire ebbed to a cooler red flame. I gave her a questioning look. She hesitated, then touched the base of her throat. She hadn't been wearing a necklace before, I was sure of that. But when she touched her throat, an amulet blinked into existence. A glittering golden scarab on a gold chain. She must have hidden it with a glamour, a magical illusion like Setna had done with the ribbons of Hathor. The scarab looked metal, but I realized I'd seen it before, and I'd seen it alive. Back when Ra had imprisoned Apophis in the underworld, he'd given up part of his soul, his incarnation as Khepri, Scarab of the Morning Sun, to keep his enemy confined. He'd buried Apophis under a landslide of living beetles. By the time Sadie and I had found that prison last spring, millions of scarabs had been reduced to desiccated shells. When Apophis broke free, only one golden beetle survived, the last remnant of Khepri's power. Ra had tried to swallow that scarab. Yes, disgusting, I know. When that didn't work, he'd offered it to Zia. I didn't remember Zia taking the scarab, but somehow I knew that amulet was the same bug. Zia, she shook her head adamantly. Later. She gestured at Setna, who was in the middle of his spell. Okay, probably not a good time to talk. I didn't want the tunnel coming down on us, but my mind was reeling.
You haven't figured it out?
Setna had taunted me. I knew Ra was fascinated with Zia. She was his favorite babysitter. Setna mentioned that Zia was having temperature control problems.
The old man is getting to you, he'd said.
And Ra had given Zia that scarab, literally a piece of his soul, as if she were his high priestess, or maybe someone even more important. The tunnel rumbled. The dead-end wall dissolved into dust, revealing a chamber beyond. Setna glanced back at us with a smile.
Showtime, kids!
We followed him into a circular room that reminded me of the library at Brooklyn House. The floor was a sparkling mosaic of pastures and rivers. On the walls, painted priests were adorning painted cows with flowers and feathery headdresses for some kind of festival, while ancient Egyptians waved palm fronds and shook bronze noisemakers called sistrums. The domed ceiling depicted Osiris on his throne, passing judgment over a bull. For an absurd moment, I wondered if Amit devoured the hearts of wicked cows and if he liked the beefy taste. In the middle of the chamber, on a coffin-shaped pedestal, stood a life-sized statue of the Apis bull. It was made of dark stone, basalt maybe, but painted so skillfully it looked alive. Its eyes seemed to follow me. Its hide glistened black except for a small white diamond on the front of its chest, and over its back was a gold blanket cut and embroidered to resemble hawk's wings. Between its horns sat a frisbee of gold, a sun disk crown. Beneath that, sticking out of the bull's forehead like a curly unicorn horn, was a rearing cobra. A year ago, I would have said freaky, but at least it's just a statue. Now, I'd had lots of experience with Egyptian statues coming to life and trying to stomp the Ankh out of me. Setna didn't seem worried. He strolled right up to the stone bull and patted its leg. "The Shrine of Apis! I built this chamber just for my chosen priests and me. Now all we have to do is wait."
"Wait for what?" Zia asked.
Being a smart girl, she was hanging back by the entrance with me. Setna checked his non-existent watch. "It won't be long. Just a timer, sorta. Come on in, make yourself comfortable." I edged my way inside. I waited for the doorway to solidify behind me, but it stayed open.
"You sure the book is still here?"
"Oh, yeah."
Setna walked around the statue, checking the base.
"I just need to remember which of these panels on the dais is going to pop open. I wanted to make this entire room out of gold, you know. That would have been much cooler. But Dad cut back on my funding."
"Your dad?"
Zia stepped next to me and slipped her hand into mine, which I didn't mind. The golden scarab necklace glinted around her neck.
"You mean Ramses the Great?"
Setna's mouth twisted in a cruel sneer.
"Yeah, that's how his PR department branded him. Me, I like to call him Ramses II, or Ramses Number Two."
"Ramses?" I said. "Your dad is the Ramses?"
I suppose I hadn't processed how Setna fit into Egyptian history. Looking at this scrawny little guy with his greasy hair, his shoulder-padded jacket, and his ridiculous bling, I couldn't believe he was related to a ruler so famous. Even worse, it made him related to me, since our mom's side of the family traced its magic heritage from Ramses the Great. Sadie says she can see the family resemblance between Setna and me. Shut up, Sadie. I guess Setna didn't like my looking surprised. He stuck his beaky nose in the air.
"You should know what it's like, Carter Kane, growing up in the shadow of a famous dad, always trying to live up to his legend. Look at you, son of the great Dr. Julius Kane. You finally make a name for yourself as a big-shot magician. What does your dad do? He goes and becomes a god."
Setna laughed coldly. I'd never felt any resentment toward my father before. I'd always thought it was cool being Dr. Kane's son. But Setna's words rolled over me, and anger started to build in my chest.
"He's playing with you," said the voice of Horus.
I knew Horus was right, but that didn't make me feel better. "Where's the book, Setna?" I asked. "Enough delays."
"Don't warp your wand, pal. It won't be much longer."
He gazed at the picture of Osiris on the ceiling.
"There he is, the blue dude himself. I'm telling you, Carter, you and I are a lot alike. I can't go anywhere in Egypt without seeing my dad's face either. Abu Simbel? There's Papa Ramses glaring down at me. 4 copies of him, each 60 feet tall. It's like a nightmare. Half the temples in Egypt, he commissioned them and put up statues of himself. Is it any wonder I wanted to be the world's biggest magician?
He puffed up his scrawny chest.
And I made it, too. What I don't understand, Carter Kane, is why you haven't taken the Pharaoh's throne yet. You've got Horus on your side, itching for power. You should merge with the god, become the Pharaoh of the world, and,
he patted the Apis statue.
Take the bull by the horns.
He's right, Horus said. This human has wisdom.
Make up your mind, I complained.
Carter, don't listen to him,
Zia said.
Setna, whatever you're up to, stop.
Now, what I'm up to?
Look, doll, don't call me that,
Zia said.
Hey, I'm on your side,
Setna promised. The book's right here in the dais. As soon as the bull moves...
The bull moves? I asked.
Setna narrowed his eyes.
Didn't I mention that? I got the idea from this holiday we used to have in the old days, the Festival of Sed. Awesome fun. You ever been to that running of the bulls in, what is it, Spain?
Pamplona, I said. Another wave of resentment got the best of me. My dad had taken me to Pamplona once, but he hadn't let me go out in the street while the bulls were running through town. He'd said it was too dangerous, as if his secret life as a magician weren't way more dangerous than that.
Right, Pamplona, Setna agreed. Well, you know where that tradition started. Egypt. The pharaoh would do this ritual race with the Apis bull to renew his kingly power, prove his strength, get blessed by the gods, all that junk. In later times, it became just a charade, no real danger. But at the beginning, it was the real thing, life and death.
On the word death, the bull statue moved. He bent his legs stiffly. Then he lowered his head and glared at me, snorting out a cloud of dust.
Setna!
I reached for my sword, but of course it wasn't there.
Make that thing stop, or I'll wrap you in ribbon so fast.
Oh, I wouldn't do that,
Setna warned. See, I'm the only one who can pick up the book without getting zapped by about 16 different curses.
Between the bull's horns, its golden sun disc flashed. On its forehead, the cobra writhed to life, hissing and spitting gobs of fire. Zia drew her wand. Was it my imagination or was her scarab necklace starting to steam?
Call off that creature, Setna, or I swear.
I can't, doll. Sorry.
He grinned at us from behind the bull's dais. He didn't look very sorry.
This is part of the security system, see? If you want the book, you've got to distract the bull and get it out of here while I open the dais and grab the Book of Toth. I have complete faith in you.
The bull pawed his pedestal and leaped off. Zia pulled me back into the hallway.
That's it, Setna shouted, just like the Sed festival. Prove you're worthy of the Pharaoh's throne, kid. Run or die.
The bull charged. A sword would have been really nice. I would have settled for a matador's cape and a spear. Or an assault rifle. Instead, Zia and I ran back through the catacombs and quickly realized that we were lost. Letting Setna lead us into the maze had been a stupid idea. I should have dropped breadcrumbs or marked the walls with hieroglyphs or something. I hoped the tunnels would be too narrow for the Apis bull. No such luck. I heard rock walls rumbling behind us as the bull shouldered his way through. There was another sound I liked even less, a deep hum followed by an explosion. I didn't know what that was, but it was good incentive to run faster. We must have passed through a dozen halls. Each had 20 or 30 sarcophagi. I couldn't believe how many apices had been mummified down here. Centuries worth of bull. Behind us, our monstrous stone friend bellowed as he smashed his way through the tunnels. I glanced back once and was sorry I did. The bull was closing fast, the cobra on his forehead spewing fire.
This way, Zia cried.
She pulled me down a side corridor. At the far end, what looked like daylight spilled from an open doorway. We sprinted toward it. I was hoping for an exit. Instead, we stumbled into another circular chamber.
There was no bull statue in the middle, but spaced around the circumference were four giant stone sarcophagi. The walls were painted with pictures of bovine paradise. Cows being fed, cows frolicking in meadows, cows being worshipped by silly little humans. The daylight streamed from a shaft in the domed ceiling 20 feet above. A beam of sunshine sliced through the dusty air and hit the middle of the floor like a spotlight, but there was no way we could use the shaft to escape. Even if I turned into a falcon, the opening was too narrow, and I wasn't about to leave Zia alone.
"Dead end," she said.
The Apis bull loomed in the doorway, blocking our exit. His hood ornament cobra hissed. We backed into the room until we stood in the warm sunlight. It seemed cruel to die here, stuck under thousands of tons of rock, but able to see the sun. The bull pawed the floor. He took a step forward, then hesitated, as if the sunlight bothered him. "Maybe I can talk to him," I said. "He's connected to Osiris, right?" Zia looked at me like I was crazy, which I was, but I didn't have any better ideas. She readied her wand and staff.
"I'll cover you."
I stepped toward the monster and showed my empty hands.
"Nice bull. I'm Carter Kane. Osiris is my dad, sort of. How about we call a truce?" And the cobra spewed fire in my face. It would have turned me into an extra crispy Carter, but Zia shouted a command. As I stumbled backward, her staff absorbed the blast, sucking in the flames like a vacuum cleaner. She sliced the air with her wand, and a shimmering red wall of fire erupted around the Apis bull. Unfortunately, the bull just stood there and glared at us, completely unharmed. Zia cursed.
"We seem to be at an impasse with the fire magic."
The bull lowered its horns. My war god instincts took control. "Take cover!" Zia dove one way, I dove the other. The bull's sun disc glowed and hummed, then shot a golden beam of heat right where we'd been standing. I barely made it behind a sarcophagus. My clothes were steaming, the bottoms of my shoes were melted. Where the beam had hit, the floor was blackened and bubbling as if the rock had reached boiling point.
"Cows with laser beams?" I protested. "That's completely unfair!"
"Carter,"
Zia called from across the room.
"You okay?"
"We'll have to split up," I shouted back. "I'll distract it. You get out of here."
"What? No!"
The bull turned toward the sound of her voice. I had to move fast. My avatar wouldn't be much good in an enclosed space like this, but I needed the war god's strength and speed. I summoned the power of Horus. Blue light flickered around me. My skin felt as thick as steel, my muscles as powerful as hydraulic pistons. I rose to my feet, smashed my fists into the sarcophagus, and reduced it to a pile of stone and mummy dust. I picked up a chunk of the lid, a 300-pound stone shield, and charged at the bull. We smashed into each other. Somehow I held my ground, but it took every bit of my magical strength. The bull bellowed and pushed. The cobra spit flames that rolled over the top of my shield.
"Zia, get out of here!" I shouted.
"I'm not leaving you.
You've got to. I can't..."
The hairs on my arms stood up even before I heard the humming sound. My slab of stone disintegrated in a flash of gold, and I flew backward, crashing into another sarcophagus. My vision blurred. I heard Zia shout. When my eyes could focus again, I saw her standing in the middle of the room, wrapped in sunlight, chanting a spell I didn't recognize. She'd gotten the bull's attention, which had probably saved my life. But before I could cry out, the bull aimed his sun disc and shot a superheated laser beam straight at Zia.
"No!"
I screamed. The light blinded me. The heat sucked all the oxygen out of my lungs. There was no way Zia could have survived that hit. But when the golden light faded, Zia was still there. Around her burned a massive shield shaped like a scarab shell. Her eyes glowed with orange fire. Flames swirled around her. She looked at the bull and spoke a deep, rasping voice that definitely wasn't hers.
I am Khepri, the rising sun. I will not be denied.
Only later did I realize that she'd spoken in ancient Egyptian. She thrust out her hand. A miniature comet shot toward the Apis bull, and the monster burst into flames, turning and stomping, suddenly panicked. His legs crumbled. He collapsed and broke into a smoking pile of charred rubble. The room was suddenly quiet. I was afraid to move. Zia was still wreathed in fire, and it seemed to be getting hotter, burning yellow, then white. She stood as if in a trance. The golden scarab around her neck was definitely smoking now. Zia! My head throbbed, but I managed to rise. She turned toward me and hefted another fireball. Zia, no! I said. It's me, Carter! She hesitated.
Carter.
Her expression turned to confusion, then fear. The orange flames faded in her eyes, and she collapsed in the pool of sunlight. I ran to her. I tried to gather her in my arms, but her skin was too hot to touch. The golden scarab had left a nasty burn on her throat. Water, I muttered to myself. I need water. I'd never been good at divine words, but I shouted, Maw! The symbol blazed above us. Several cubic gallons of water materialized in midair and crashed down on us. Zia's face steamed. She coughed and spluttered, but she didn't wake. Her fever still felt dangerously high. I'll get you out of here, I promised, lifting her in my arms. I didn't need the strength of Horus. I had so much adrenaline coursing through my body I didn't feel any of my own injuries. I ran right by Setna when he passed me in the hall.
Hey, pal!
He turned and jogged along next to me, waving a thick papyrus scroll.
Good job! I got the Book of Toth.
You almost killed Zia, I snapped. Get us out of here, now!
Okay, okay, Setna said. Calm down.
I'm taking you back to my dad's courtroom, I growled. I'm going to personally stuff you down Amit's mouth, like a branch into a wood chipper.
Whoa, big man!
Setna led me up a sloping passage back to the electrical lighting of the excavated tunnels.
How about we get you out of here first, huh? Remember, you still need me to decipher this book and find the serpent's shadow. Then we'll see about the wood chipper, okay?
She can't die, I insisted.
Right, I got that.
Setna led me through more tunnels, picking up speed. Zia seemed to weigh nothing. My headache had disappeared. Finally, we burst into the sunlight and ran for the Egyptian queen. I'll admit I wasn't thinking straight. When we got back on board, Bloodstained Blade reported on the ship's repairs, but I barely heard him. I plowed right past him and carried Zia inside to the nearest cabin. I set her on the bed and rummaged through my pack for medical supplies. A water bottle, some magic salve Jazz had given me, a few written charms. I was no Rekhet like Jazz. My healing powers consisted mostly of bandages and aspirin, but I began to work. Come on, I mumbled. Come on, Zia, you're going to be fine. She was so warm, her drenched clothes had almost dried. Her eyes were rolled back in her head. She started muttering, and I could have sworn she said, Dung balls. Time to roll the dung balls. It might have been funny, except for the fact that she was dying.
That's Khepri talking, Setna explained. He's the divine dung beetle rolling the sun across the sky.
I didn't want to process that. The idea that the girl I liked had been possessed by a dung beetle and was now having dreams about pushing a giant sphere of flaming poo across the sky. But there was no question. Zia had used the path of the gods. She'd called on Ra, or at least one of his incarnations, Khepri. Ra had chosen her, the way Horus had chosen me. Suddenly it made sense that Apophis had destroyed Zia's village when she was young, and that the old chief lector Iskander had gone to such lengths to train her and then hide her in a magical sleep. If she held the secret to reawakening the sun god. I dabbed some ointment on her throat. I pressed a cold washcloth to her forehead, but it didn't seem to help. I turned to Setna. Heal her!
Oh, he winced. See, healing magic isn't really my thing.
But at least you've got the Book of Toth. If she dies, it wasn't for nothing.
If she dies, I warned, I will... I couldn't think of a torture painful enough.
I see you need some time, Setna said. No problem. How about I go tell your captain where we're heading? We should get back to the Duat, back onto the River of Night, as soon as possible. Do I have your permission to give him orders?
Fine, I snapped. Just get out of my sight!
I don't know how much time passed. Zia's fever seemed to subside. She started breathing more easily and slipped into a gentler sleep. I kissed her forehead and stayed by her side, holding her hand. I was dimly aware of the ships moving. We dropped into a momentary freefall, then hit water with a shudder and a loud splash. I felt a river rolling under the hull once again, and from the tingling in my gut, I guessed we were back in the Duat. The door creaked open behind me, but I kept my eyes on Zia. I waited for Setna to say something, probably to brag about how well he'd done navigating us back to the River of Night, but he stayed silent.
Well? I asked. The sound of splintering wood made me jump. Setna wasn't at the door. Instead, blood-stained Blade loomed over me, his axe head having just split the door frame. His fists were clenched. He spoke in an angry, cold hum.
Lord Cain, it's time to die.
13. A friendly game of hide-and-seek with bonus points for painful death. I see. Leave off with the axe-murdering demon. Trying to make my part of the story seem boring, eh? Carter, you are such an attention hog. Well, as you were cruising down the Nile in a lavishly appointed riverboat, Walt and I were travelling in a bit less style. From the realm of the dead, I ventured another conversation with Isis to negotiate a doorway into the Nile Delta. Isis must have been cross with me, I can't imagine why, because she deposited Walt and me waist-deep in a swamp, our feet completely stuck in the mud. Thanks, I yelled at the sky. I tried to move, but couldn't. Clouds of mosquitoes gathered around us. The river was alive with bubbling and splashing noises, which made me think of pointy-toothed tiger fish and the water elementals Carter had once described to me. Any ideas? I asked Walt. Now that he was back in the mortal world, he seemed to have lost his vitality. He looked, I suppose the phrase would be, hollowed out. His clothes fit more loosely. The whites of his eyes were tinted an unhealthy yellow. His shoulders hunched, as if the amulets around his neck weighed him down. Seeing him like this made me want to cry, which is not something I do easily. Yeah, he said, digging through his bag. I have just the thing. He brought out a shapti, a white wax figurine of a crocodile. Oh, you didn't, I said. You wonderfully naughty boy. Walt smiled. For a moment, he almost looked like his old self. Everyone was abandoning Brooklyn House. I figured it wasn't right to leave him behind. He tossed the figurine in the river and spoke a command word. Philip of Macedonia erupted from the water. Being surprised by a giant crocodile in the Nile is something you usually want to avoid, but Philip was a welcome sight. He smiled at me with his massive croc teeth, his pink eyes gleaming and his white scaly back floating just above the surface. Walt and I grabbed hold. In no time, Philip had pulled us free of the muck. Soon we were perched on his back, making our way upriver. I rode in front, straddling Philip's shoulders. Walt sat behind at Philip's midsection. Philip was such a roomy crocodile that this left considerable space between Walt and me, possibly more than I would have preferred. Nevertheless, we had a lovely ride, except for being drenched, caked in mud, and swarmed by mosquitoes. The landscape was a maze of waterways, grassy islands, reed beds, and muddy shoals. It was impossible to tell where the river ended and the land began. Occasionally, in the distance, we saw ploughed fields or the rooftops of small villages, but mostly we had the river to ourselves. We saw several crocodiles, but they all steered clear of us. They would be quite insane to bother Philip. Like Carter and Zia, we'd got a late start leaving the underworld. I was alarmed at how far the sun had already climbed in the sky. The heat turned the air into a soupy haze. My shirt and trousers were soaked through. I wished I'd brought a change of clothes, though it wouldn't have made much difference, as my